You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
NBA training camps are underway as all 30 teams prepare for the upcoming NBA season. The Los Angeles Lakers, led by LeBron James and Anthony Davis, will begin defending their championship later this month. LeBron was on the road trip and podcast recently and opened up about the boycott in the bubble last season. He said, quote, "So I got on the phone with Chris Paul because their game was next, and I called him and Russ Westbrook, and I told them straight up, there is no way that we can go out on the floor as the Lakers and play our game with what just transpired. What are you guys going to do?" And they felt the same way. "We would look stupid if we went out and played, and Milwaukee decided to sit down, and we've been preaching this solidarity thing as a brotherhood, because we are a brotherhood, even when you get blindsided from your brother." All right, those are very strong words, and joining us now to help break it all down, New York Times bestselling author Dr. Michael Eric Dyson, whose new book, Long Time Coming, Reckoning with Race in America, is now available, just came out yesterday. Dr. Dyson, thank you so very much for being here with us. I know all three of us super excited to have you on First Take. I want to start off by asking you, as we all know, season less than 3 weeks away from now, what responsibility does LeBron James and other players have in terms of keeping up with the fight of social justice during the upcoming season?
Well, they've taken on to themselves, and thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored to be here. I think they've taken up themselves the mantle of leadership. We don't have to advise them. We don't have to counsel them. They already know what's at stake. No athlete, arguably, since Muhammad Ali, at the height of his fame, has leveraged his athletic ability in defense of social justice issues. And I think with the congregation of stars that are around the NBA right now, as they begin to ramp up for this new season of 72 games, there's no question that LeBron James will continue to carry the responsibility along with those other conscientious stars, not only by wearing stuff on the back of their jerseys and representing what's on the front of those jerseys, but representing the broader interests of their communities. And we know athletics, from the very beginning of African-American participation, has always been connected to and tethered with a sense of social responsibility, whether it was Joe Louis in the ring with his fisticuffs or Jackie Robinson on the diamond, or, you know, Bill Russell on the parquet floor at Boston. These athletes, or Wilma Rudolph or Althea Gibson in tennis, these women and men have understood that their athletic ability is subordinate to a broader concern about their race in the society. And LeBron James and those fellows in the NBA, and by the way, the WNBA, are doing an extraordinary job.
Dr. Michael Eric Dyson, always an honor and privilege to have you on the show, my brother. And by the way, it ain't just a New York Times bestseller. You're a seven-time New York Times bestseller. Let me make sure I throw that out there. But I ask you this question. When you, obviously the George
Bill
Floyd.
Russell of New York Times bestseller.
Obviously the George Floyd killing was an inspiration. But just as an historian, and an activist that you are, not just a professor, seeing what you saw from these NBA players, I wanted to know whether or not it caught you by surprise, or did you anticipate that this was a powder keg ready to burst at any given moment, and this ultimately was inevitable, what you saw transpired over the last few months?
Right. Given how brilliantly framed that, I want to say yes to both of those issues, right? On the one hand, it was certainly a powder keg waiting to happen because, after all, these are men and women who are involved and invested in their communities. And so what happens outside of that arena affects them inside the arena. They have emotions. They have heart. They have intelligence. They have empathy. They understand the context of their own suffering. LeBron James had the N-word scrawled on his house in Los Angeles even before he became a Laker. So he understood existentially what politically and conceptually was going on. But on the other hand, I think, Stephen A., you've raised a very powerful point. We couldn't have anticipated that they would have a work stoppage on that day. We couldn't have anticipated that at that very moment, it was going to explode in such a way that they made a statement about the shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and they would no longer stand for that. Not even sports which relieves the suffering and burden of people. We turn to sports because our lives are either great or not so great. We want to be distracted. We want to be uplifted. We want to be edified. And when we look at those players on the arena floor, we are, for a moment, for 2.5 hours, taken away and distracted from whatever we got going on. But they said, in this moment, we know that's our responsibility, but our greater responsibility is to respond to social issues that affect all of our people and to use our platform in an intelligent fashion to amplify and echo those great ideals.
Professor, let me add to the chorus of voices and say that you elevate and make better every TV and radio show you're on, and we're thrilled to have you, and I'm thrilled to have you on the show today. Let me ask you this, because you're also a little bit of a hot take sports guy. I've had lots of sports conversations with you, and we've debated sports. We teased this segment by saying how LeBron's social activism, according to Professor Dyson, does it elevate him above MJ? You know, I talk about boxing a lot, and Sugar Ray Robinson's the greatest pound-for-pound fighter of all time, but if you say in a larger sense, who's the greatest fighter ever, it's Muhammad Ali, because he was globally more significant as a result of his political and social activism. Does LeBron's activism mean that he eclipses Michael Jordan, or Kareem even, who was also socially active, in a larger sense?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you know, my troika, my triumvirate, my trilogy, my three would be Kobe, LeBron, and Jordan for different reasons. Jordan for the unprecedented, unparalleled, and perhaps unduplicatable feat of, at the height of gym shoe mania in America that he helped spark, at the height of the globalization of the game, he and David Stern taking it global, the ability to use his magic on the court to really conquer the world can never be duplicated, because it came at a particular time in a post-civil rights generation where this figure, a dark-skinned black man, bore on his shoulders the burden of representing a sport that had 50 years ago been quite complicated when it came to black folk. Kobe Bryant, the pure skill, the pure talent, the footwork, the majesty on court, taking difficult shots, making them over taller opponents than even a Michael Jordan. But then when you come to LeBron James, when he's a hybrid of a Magic and a Michael, and yet producing a tertium quid, as they say, a third thing, something we've never seen before. And when you look at the freakish nature of his athleticism, joined to, at the height of his fame and his global acclaim, being willing to take a stand in defense of social justice issues and people whose backs are against the wall, he's incomparable and in the class by himself. So at that level, if we're gonna throw everything into the hopper, it would be hard to say that anybody is greater than LeBron at that level.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
And still here with us, we have seven-time New York Times bestselling author Dr. Michael Eric Dyson, whose new book, Long Time Coming, Reckoning with Race in America, is now available as of yesterday. So everyone make sure you go out and get your copy. Dr. Dyson, once again, thank you so much for being with us here on First Take. Stephen A., you want to start things off?
Well, first of all, being out here in L.A. right now, I love your breakdown of LeBron compared to Kobe Bryant, our brother, and obviously we miss him every single day. But let me ask you this question, switching it just a touch, Dr. Right. Dyson. If LeBron James, the LeBron James that you described, was an NFL player instead of a basketball player, what would the situation have entailed as it pertains to Colin Kaepernick and the social justice issues that ultimately emanated from all of that? What would those times have been like for the National Football League in terms of how different it would be if a player like LeBron was in the NFL instead of the NBA? I'm talking about that kind of impact.
Right. That's a great question. And I think that it would be hugely different because a LeBron James standing behind a particular issue elevates the consideration of the issue at hand. If Tom Brady is upset about something, other people are going to be upset. The league will listen. If, you know, DK Metcalf, who is now rising as a star, you know, started from the bottom, now he's here, is concerned about something, it's less compelling than Tom Brady, but he's on the radar. So the higher you are on the chart, on the depth chart, the greater the impact you will have. And if LeBron James had been a wide receiver, as he aspired to be at one point, and he was out there catching balls and competing at the world-class level that he is competing with in basketball, there is no question that the NFL would have been confronted with a necessary decision. They're not gonna cut him. If he is in the position of an all-star quarterback and he is an all-pro quarterback and he is making a statement, they're gonna find a way to adjust, because the hunger for talent, the desire for his gift, and the impact he would have on the bottom line, even Jerry Jones, who is concerned about the bottom line in regard to what his team will do and how they'll perform on the gridiron, would have to concede to what LeBron's wishes are.
Max, excuse me for 1 second. I'll let you chime in here. But Dr. Dyson, I'll follow up with this question. So what should that say to us about what the NFL is all about in this day and age as a players' association, as a player's body, per se, considering what you just highlighted it would be like if a LeBron James kind of caliber player with that voice was in the NFL? What should that say to us about the NFL right now?
That's a great point, too. I think, first of all, we got to look at the level of owners, those who are in charge. They are tended to be older, whiter, more conservative men who are not interested in the kind of social justice issues initially that were put in the hopper, so to speak. But to their credit, some of them caught up. They're still far more conservative than the relatively more liberal owners of the NBA, but they're at least willing to listen. The remarkable thing that, you know, Roger Goodell did in partnership with Jay-Z, let's not ignore the fact that Jay-Z from the inside is throwing elbows, so to speak, to change the sport up there. He's throwing elbows. He's pushing him. He's saying, listen to these young men. This is what they're about. I'm not just about the entertainment. I'm also about what's on that field, which can be entertaining, but it's about a greater athletic glory. So when you have the fact that you've got more conservative owners and football players who are less likely to speak up, the structure of their contracts is not the same. The CBA is not the same. The guaranteed money is not the same. We see at the high end what's going on now with Patrick Mahomes and Carson Wentz, y'all's boy, messing up right now. But the reality is they don't have the same kind of economic stability and the certitude of the cash coming in the same way that NBA players do. And so when we look at it that way, we can understand why they're less likely to speak up. But those who do speak up, the Malcolm Jenkins, who articulate their viewpoints, who regardless of the consequence, make their voices known, I think are to be commended.
Professor, considering the persistence, the existence and persistence of structural racism, right? So access to jobs and schools, real estate development, right? All these kind of things. The persistence of the structural racism, gerrymandering districts, right? Taking away the black vote, essentially, or diminishing black political power, is formidable. How do you think in a broader cultural sense, someone like LeBron speaking up actually changes things that are structural, institutional, and awesome in their scope. How do athletes like LeBron actually affect the broader culture?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. First of all, you have to raise consciousness because these institutions, these structures, these systems have people who are in control. Now, we know institutionally and systemically, it means that it doesn't matter who's in control. It's going to be a self-perpetuating inequality that will be the product of people engaging with those systems. But it does make a difference who's in the spot, who's in the space, who's at the top of the food chain. And if LeBron can affect the consciousness of people who are at the helm of these institutions and systems, it can make a huge difference. They can be more self-reflective. They can look at their corporate structure and say, hey, it's not about marching in the streets. What are we doing inside the corporate world as well? So when we look at it that way, the combination of it means LeBron James can inspire somebody. Tupac Shakur said, I may not change the world, but I'll spark the brain that will. LeBron may be in the same position.
Last question, really, really quick. He is 36 years of age. You know what? It's the twilight. It's almost over. Next couple of years or so. Who's the heir apparent to LeBron James as a voice in sports and in the NBA in particular, your estimation? Real quick answer, if you can.
Young brother Brown from the Boston Celtics, I think, has a tremendous consciousness and a tremendous commitment to social change. I think he will be one of the figures who will take up that mantle.
Well, Dr. Dyson, a huge thank you so much. You're so smart, so insightful. You certainly know your sports. And one more quick plug for your book. Everybody, make sure you go out and get his new book that's now out as of yesterday, Long Time Coming, Reckoning with Race in America. Dr. Dyson, again, thank you so much, and we hope you have an amazing day.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles. On some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits, like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
All right, this Saturday, welterweight champion Errol Spence Jr. will make his return to the boxing ring after nearly a year layoff due to a near-fatal car crash. He will defend his title against one of the best welterweights in the world in Danny Garcia. And with that, we welcome in the great Errol Spence Jr. to First Take. Errol, you know what they say, you can't have a comeback if you don't have a setback. I know it's been a crazy past year for you, and you have a big weekend ahead. So what's been the toughest challenge for you as you prepare to return to the ring?
For me, just staying focused, training, losing the weight, and just being 100% on point. I think me and my coach been working since probably July, so I mean, we've been grinding, working hard, trying to get back, staying 100% focused. I'm 100% ready for December 5th, Saturday night.
Errol, thank you for being on the show. First of all, I want to say I'm thankful and I'm grateful that you're okay, because that was a nasty-looking car crash that you got yourself into, and we understand the trouble that came from that. I want to know what your health situation is like, because, you know, to me, I know you walked away, you had a bloody eye and some scars on your face, but that seemed to be all. My first thing is, how healthy are you?
I'm 100% healthy. Like I said, I went to a clinic and got checked out and went to the hospital. They did all type of exams on me, MRIs and everything. You know, they didn't see any brain swelling or anything. Had me do reaction tests and everything, and I passed them with flying colors. So they gave me the cue to continue boxing. So that's the first thing was my health, to make sure I was good and everything, checked out straight. I was going to the gym, I was training. And then I started sparring in September. I started sparring in September. I looked great. And, then we got a fight with Danny Garcia. So everything been going, pretty much as scheduled. It was just a blessing that, I'm able to continue my career so early and, come back so early, a little less over than a year.
For those mainstream sports fans who don't know, Errol Spence is considered one of the real special fighters in boxing, tall, rangy, a southpaw, can beat you with his jab and defense, ask Mikey Garcia, but doesn't look to do that, looks to punish the opponent, knockout power. You have it all. You're a complete fighter, Errol. But Danny Garcia, is also a very good fighter.
Yes, he is.
He has one close loss, very close loss to Keith Thurman, one wider loss to Sean Porter, but Sean Porter gave you everything you wanted. That was a fight of the year type fight. I thought you won because of the knockdown late, which he got up from, but that was nip and tuck the whole way. How do you plan after this kind of accident, coming back from that, to actually beat Danny Garcia? What's the game plan?
Well, first of all, I thought, I could have beat Sean Porter easy on the outside like I did Mikey Garcia. But, my whole game plan was a Sean Porter fight, even sitting in training camp. I wanted to fight. I wanted to show people that I can beat him on the inside. So that's what I did. Even with Mikey Garcia, I wanted to show people that I can box, because people said that he had better boxing IQ than me. So I showed people I can box. And with this fight, I'm just going to show everybody that, I'm just all around just a better fighter on the inside, outside, with the jab, combination, hooks, whatever you want to do in the ring, I can do better than Danny Garcia. I mean, he's a great fighter, iron chin, very tough. But I don't think, even if I was at 70%, Danny Garcia couldn't beat me.
It's interesting that you say that. Listen, I like Danny Garcia a lot. He's 36-2. His only two losses were to Keith Thurman and to Sean Porter, just like Max pointed out. But I had you as a, my top pound for pound, top two pound for pound in the world. But Terrence Crawford has ascended, and I know you're not looking ahead because you're smart enough not to look past anybody, and you got to handle your business first. But there are a lot of people, Max included, I don't think I'm stepping out of turn speaking for him here, when we talk about a fight that we desperately want, it is Errol Spence Jr. versus Terrence Crawford.
Number one
fight. And you got Terrence Crawford talking about everybody running from him. Nobody wanna give him those fights. What do you have to say about that?
I mean, really nothing to say about it. Nobody's running from Terrence Crawford. Like I said, I'm coming off a car accident and I had to fight Danny Garcia. Somebody would have picked the tune up, but I'm fighting Danny Garcia, so I mean, I got to get past him to even think about somebody else. So once I get past Danny Garcia, y'all can ask me questions about Terrence Crawford.
Well, Errol, the reason I think people bring up Crawford is because in the history of boxing, almost never have there been two undefeated boxer punchers who were both elite pound for pound in or around their best weight division in their primes, where it's like a 50-50 fight. So that, to me, that's the best fight in boxing in years that can be made. So with apologies, because I know you got to deal with Danny, but you were the one who came on and said, anything he could do, I could do better. So if you indulge us just for 1 second, is the idea that because in the PBC where you are, you guys have all these welterweights, you can fight each other, make money like you're about to against Danny Garcia, that you're waiting out Terrence to see if his contract lapses and he crosses the street and goes with you guys and then fight him? Or do you think you would fight him? Are you interested as a fighter, as a champion, in seeing who the best dude is, like Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns once did, whether or not he's with the PBC?
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in fighting Terrence Crawford. I think it's a great fight. He has the world title. I want to be undisputed welterweight champion of the world, like I said. So I feel like we're going to have to cross that path soon. But, my main goal is Danny Garcia on Fox Pay-Per-View. And, I feel like, that's the biggest fight for me right now at this point, especially coming from my car crash. So I have to get him out the way to even think about somebody else. So my 100%, focus is on Danny Garcia right now. And then after that, we can talk about other opponents.
when you think about Danny Garcia, I brought up the fact that he's 36-2. I think he's an exceptional fighter. Obviously, he takes a punch. He has not been knocked out. The brother can fight. When you talk about fighting him, how big of a fight do you think this is for you in terms of how it could potentially catapult you in the mind's eye? Do you think you're already where you want to be, or do you feel like you still have so much to prove because you've been underappreciated and winning this fight could go a long way towards accomplishing a significant cachet for yourself?
I definitely have so more to prove. I mean, Danny Garcia, like I said, you know, his resume, especially at 140, is great. He was unified champion, things like that. I mean, he's a great fighter. And I feel like nobody has really just beat him decisively and really, you know, put a hurting on him or just, you know, punish him. So for me to do that, you know, that would, you know, speak volumes, especially coming off, you know, years from training layoff. So that's what I'm looking to do. I'm looking to, you know, have this one-sided, you know, beating, especially in my hometown.
Errol, sometimes when fighters talk about they were trying to do X or Y or Z in a fight, it's excuse-making because the performance wasn't great. But in your case, I believe what you're saying. You, against Kell Brook in England, you walked him down out and were the boxer puncher and beat him up and knocked him out in a terrific fight. Against Mikey Garcia, it seemed clear to me. You wanted to beat him on the jab and defense, and that's what you did. You were criticized for not knocking him out, but I actually thought it was a brilliant performance, and you did prove that point. Are you saying now that is the goal in this fight, to prove against Danny Garcia that you can go back to the fighter after the car crash that can beat you up, punish you, and knock you out worse than anyone else has done it? That you are using this as a measuring stick, you know, Keith Thurman, Sean Porter, and that is the point of this fight? Because if you say that, I'll believe you're going to do what you say you're going to do.
Well, first of all, you can exclude that, Keith Thurman. That is not going to happen. And secondly, of course, man, you know, I want to make, you know, I just want everybody's been doubting me. Everybody's been saying, is he going to be a shell of himself? Is he the same fighter? And I'm a realist. I'm a real person. I feel like, you know, people should be saying that, because if I see in the car accident and I'm from the outside looking in, I say the same thing. So for me, I just want to put on a great performance, a great show, and show people that, man, he's still beating guys up, punishing them, and just, you know, making them quit mentally and physically. So for me, I'm just going to, you know, try to put a beating on Danny Garcia and make it the worst beating that he ever had in his boxing career.
Really? All right. How's that for a final statement?
Okay.
Errol,
all right.
Thank you so much. You know, we wish you the best of luck this weekend defending your title against Danny Garcia in Dallas, Texas. We're so happy to see you ready to go. Also, happy to see you healthy. So thank you so much for being here on First Take.
Happy to see you healthy. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, gentlemen. Well, we have a game in just a couple hours. Ravens Steelers finally happening despite 10 straight days of positive COVID tests. The Ravens have landed in Pittsburgh. They're still scheduled to face the unbeaten Steelers 3:40 p.m. Eastern today. Many believe Big Ben and company are the best shot at keeping Patrick Mahomes from back-to-back Super Bowls. And I think this is a good time to bring in our friend, Super Bowl champion, Ryan Clark. Stephen A., I'm going to start with you here. Do you give Pittsburgh any chance? Wait, hold on, Ryan. You know what? Since you just got here, we're going to start with you. Do you give the Steelers any chance to knock off the Chiefs to take the AFC?
Absolutely. I'm not Stephen A. I'm not going to get on here and backtrack and backpedal and talk about how I don't believe in the Pittsburgh Steelers, how I want them to
lose. You better watch your mouth.
I'm going to say what they are. I can say whatever I want to say.
You better watch your mouth. You better watch your mouth, Ryan Clark. You better be respectful. You better respect your elders. Go ahead.
Hey, man. I'm just treating you like you treat my guy Max, man.
No,
listen,
I know.
When you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers and the way that they're that they're put together, you know, they're a team that's put together to pressure Patrick Mahomes, to be able to play zone on the back end because you can rush four. They can also score on offense. And when we've watched Kansas City have trouble, it's been because teams are able to move the football on them. And when you have Chase Claypool, Juju Smith-Schuster, James Washington, Deontay Johnson, there's so many weapons for Big Ben to choose from and throw to. And then on the other side of that, you have to have a quarterback who's willing to compete, willing to go toe-to-toe, and that can make crucial plays in critical football moments for your football team. And that's what Ben Roethlisberger can do. And I know for so long we talked about how great Andy Reid was as a football coach, right? It was just, can he win that championship? He's had all these great teams. We all love him. Well, you know a coach that does have a championship? Mike Tomlin. You know a coach who has never had a losing season? Mike Tomlin. Do you know a coach whose team is undefeated this year? Mike Tomlin. And so when you look at everything that you need to be a winning football team, a championship football team, and dethrone a champion, the Pittsburgh Steelers have it. And they can absolutely unseat the Kansas City Chiefs as the AFC representative in the Super Bowl.
I'm taking a wait-and-see approach to this, Ryan, in all seriousness, man, because I'm reticent, because you know this better than me. There are times, for example, where a mistake here or there is made by the Pittsburgh Steelers, and their defense is able to overcome it. My fear is that you make those mistakes early, and then you end up looking like Tampa Bay in the first quarter against the Kansas City Chiefs, because Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce come out throwing bombs and running roughshod over you and put you in that kind of hole. We've seen that happen to the Pittsburgh Steelers before, particularly in a playoff game against Jacksonville with Blake Bortles as their quarterback. Imagine what could happen if something like that went against what happened with Patrick Mahomes. So I'm not doubting.
It's a different team, though.
I know that. It's a different, and I totally get that. I understand it's a totally different team, and I keep bringing up the weapons. But I'm going to tell you why a guy like James Conner, this is where my reticence comes in. Love James Conner, Max, Ryan. Respect him. Love his story. We understand the adversity that he's overcome. God bless him. We wish him nothing but the best. And he's pretty damn good. But I guess I'm spoiled a little bit, Ryan, by the Jerome Bettises of the world, the Le'Veon Bells of the world, guys that come out of the backfield that can really, really assist you in moving the chains and keeping the ball out of the opposing team's offense. That's a question mark I have. I have no question about the Steelers receiving. I see Ben completing 67% of his passes. The Claypools, Juju Smith-Schuster, Eric Ebron, Washington, James Washington, Deontay Johnson. They go five wide. We know what time it is. We get it. But you've got to be able to methodically march down the field and beat a team and keep the ball out of the opposing offense's hands. That's my question mark about the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. That's why I got to see more of it to believe it. That's where I'm coming from, Ryan.
I mean, the Patriots team that beat the greatest show on turf, who is the name brand running back, you know? Like, Belichick has a good running game a lot of the time without a name brand guy. You don't need a name brand guy to move the chains
and
to be respectable on the ground and to do what you got to do. But I mean, like, Tomlin right now, Mike Tomlin has a chance to elevate his stature, his status among the all-time great coaches.
Yeah.
He's already a future Hall of Fame coach. He's won Super Bowls. He's come in and went 8-8 without a quarterback, starting a third stringer. But look what he's doing this season. He's 10-0, right? Now imagine for a second that they wind up in the AFC Championship game against the Kansas City Chiefs, and he turns in a coaching performance. He has a team like the Patriots that played the greatest show on turf. Oh, my God, the greatest show. These Rams, they can't be beat. They have the receivers. They have everything they need, right? Like, but that well-rounded New England team who wasn't going to show you how great they were against run-of-the-mill teams, they needed another great team to bring it out in them, to show you everything they could do. If Pittsburgh does that to Kansas City, that actually – the year after we said Mike Tomlin just turned in his best coaching performance. Actually, that would be Tomlin's greatest coaching performance, and it would elevate him even more. Here's the problem. He'd be going against Andy Reid if you're asking, can they knock off the Chiefs to win the AFC? And Andy Reid was a guy who got very close, great coach, five NFC championship games, right? But no cigars. Now he has a cigar. Now Andy Reid's got that too. And he's totally loaded. And Reid, like Tomlin, is a truly great coach because he was able to change with the times. He wasn't stuck like Mike McCarthy in a previous era. He was a great coach in a previous era. And if anything, he got even better going forward, like Tomlin. So I think because of that, because the Chiefs also have a great coach, a Super Bowl winning coach, a guy who has consistently had success at the highest level, I think that neutralizes somewhat the thing that really makes Pittsburgh different and special, which is their head coach. And well, I think the talent in KC will carry the day.
And see, that's the thing is not who we're predicting to win. The question is, can they do it? Now, there are some teams that no matter what they did, you feel like if they go up against Kansas City, whether it's a regular season game or playoff game, they don't have what it takes. What I'm saying is, when you look, I still have Kansas City at number one on my power ranking because I believe all of those things that you said, Max. But when I think of a team that's perfectly and ready-made to beat them, to unseat them one day, right? Because nobody, I don't think there's a team in the league that could beat the Kansas City Chiefs 10 times out of 10 or beat them, you know, more the majority of times out of 10 than the Kansas City Chiefs will win. But you just got to win once. You got to be good that day. You got to be better that day. And I believe the Pittsburgh Steelers can do that.
Well, see, listen, and I get where you're coming from. I reiterate my point about needing to see it to believe it. I'm looking at T.J. Watt, Stephon Tuitt, Bud Dupree. Those are the three guys leading them in sacks. You're going to be able to get to the quarterback as quick as Patrick Mahomes releases that football. His moving ability, he's got some wheels on him as well. Those things could ultimately be problematic. You know me. I've always got a question about their secondary. And then on the offensive side of the ball, look at this. Ben Roethlisberger has played at all 10 games this year. You know how many times he's been sacked, Max, Ryan? He's been sacked 10 times. One time per game. He's been sacked 10 times this season, which means they're protecting him. But they got the 24th ranked rushing attack.
Get rid of the ball
now, that
quick.
Could be, now, that could have something to do with attempt because even though you got Ben Snell and you got James Conner running the football, you're throwing it more than you're running it. I get all of that. But on far too many occasions, I see them call running plays, and I don't see what I need to see from their backs in terms of being effective enough when it really, really counts to move the chains, make a difference, and keep that ball out of the opposing offense's hands. That is my ultimate fear against Kansas City. Pittsburgh should beat everybody else. And to get to your point, Max, when you talk about what Mike Tomlin could be, as great as he is, Hall of Fame coach, credentials speak for himself. We love him. We know it. But here's the bottom line. He could also hurt his cachet a little bit, too, because if you go 15-1, 16-0, 14-2, you got the number one seed, and then you get bounced out by somebody other than Kansas City, that's not going to look good either.
All right, guys, well, from two caliber Super Bowl caliber teams, I think now we should maybe transition to the NFC East. What do you say? We're going to talk about the Eagles. They have lost three in a row and are only a half game ahead of Stephen A's Cowboys for last place in the NFC East. So, what does Doug Peterson think about his job security in Philly?
Have you received assurances that you'll be able to see through this season as head coach?
I haven't been reassured one way or the other, no.
How much pressure are you feeling from the very top of the organization?
Our relationship is good. We have a lot of we communicate you know, a lot throughout the week. Listen, some of these questions might be for Mr. Lurie, obviously, but you know, look, my job is to prepare the team and get ready for Green Bay.
All right. Lots of issues among the Eagles, but of course they play in the NFC East, so anything could happen. They could still take the division, but Max, if they don't make the playoffs, should Doug Peterson be fired?
If they do or if they don't, you got to get rid of Doug Peterson. I don't even think he wants to be there. When your defense plays their guts out against Seattle, right? When they play the way they did, and you're on the Seattle 15 down 11 with 8:40 to go, fourth and four, right? Look, I'm all for being aggressive. Don't worry about the negative outcome, but there's also such a thing as situational football. You're going to need to kick a field goal at least. You have a chance there to limit it to a one-score game, or depending on how you look at it, because you got to go for two. You got to get it in the end zone twice. Nevertheless, you're still in a position to get the game to overtime, right? To go for it there, to me, in that kind of – you're saying our offense is never going to be down on the 15-yard line again. Right? Like, I don't believe in him. It's saying, I don't want any part of this. When you go to Carson Wentz on five consecutive possessions, right? It's three and out, three and out, three and out, three and out, three and out. You bring in Jalen Hurts. He finally does something positive, a little six-yard completion. And on third down, Carson Wentz is right back in the game and he gets sacked. To me, that's Doug Peterson saying, okay, tough guy, you want to do it your way? Here you go. There you go. What can you do? And you never give it to Miles Sanders. You never get it. You don't have to run on first down all the time, but could you mix a run game in a little bit? It seems to me Doug Peterson doesn't want to be there. This goes – Howie Roseman should go too. And if you can somehow move Carson Wentz's contract, you should start it all over again. Guys, Roseman also was a guy who was saying, remember what was coming out? Like, why didn't they trade for DeAndre Hopkins? They need that top receiver. He didn't want to give up the second round pick. Really? Because he used that second round pick. He didn't trade up for CD Lamb. He used that second round pick to get a backup quarterback. Like, everything is, nothing makes sense. Nothing fits together, including the owner, Jeffrey Lurie, but you're not going to get rid of the owner right now. So everyone has to go after the season. I don't care if they win the NFC least, they got to make changes.
Listen, Roseman hasn't been perfect. He passed up on DK Metcalf and drafted that dude, J.J. Whiteside or Sega, whatever the hell his name is. See, I don't know because I don't care because he's irrelevant.
Or Tega Whiteside. Line,
yeah, that, exactly. All right, we understand that, okay? But let's get that out of the way. But I'm going to tell you, I respectfully disagree. I don't disagree with your takes, Max, just your ultimate conclusion. I'm not giving up on a 28-year-old Carson Wentz who showed me just 3 years ago that he could be great. I think that that can be rectified, and I think that ultimately it will be rectified. I think Peterson's tenure in Philadelphia should be contingent on what level of progress we see from Carson Wentz moving forward with these last 5 or 6 games or so. And from there, you make a decision. And I don't need to get rid of Howie Roseman either. He just delivered me a Super Bowl a few years ago, obviously succeeded in the Chip Kelly era. They screwed him over by giving the power to Chip Kelly. They should have never compromised themselves to begin with, but give them credit for making amends and making that correction and then ultimately getting back to giving Howie Roseman some control. And let me speak to this, Ryan Clark, you might know this. I know Max does, but you may know this too. Obviously, I worked in Philadelphia for 17 years. Mm-hmm. And I worked as a reporter and ultimately was a columnist for my last 7 or 8 years there. I haven't spoken to Jeffrey Lurie in a while, but when I was there, I had a very good relationship with him, and I'm very, very fond of him. I have profound respect for this man. He's been an owner of the Philadelphia, you know, the chairman and the boss and the CEO for the Philadelphia Eagles since 1994. In that span, the man has been to the postseason 15 times. In that span, he's been to 6 conference finals. In that span, he's been to 2 Super Bowls, and he's got a Super Bowl championship. And one of the things that he doesn't do is he doesn't just lollygag around and say, I got you for 5 years, so you got a 5-year contract. He will make the changes that are necessary. I believe in him in that regard. And if what you're saying is correct, Max, in terms of Doug Peterson, you know, he doesn't even want to be there. He said, all right, you don't want to listen. You don't want to do it. All right, go and do it your way. But that's negligence on Doug Peterson's part. You're the head coach. I know for a fact that Jeffrey Lurie is the kind of man, if he hired you to be the head coach, he's going to let you be the head coach. He's going to let you coach your team. So if you've decided I'm going to acquiesce, I didn't say changes in personnel, Max. What I'm saying is if they come to you and they say to you, we want to keep this guy, owner Jeffrey Lurie, pay them, then he's going to let you do that if he elects to pay the dude. Okay? So it's incumbent upon you to cultivate that relationship. And if you haven't done that, then there's a negligence of duty on the part of Peterson. I can't blame Jeffrey Lurie for that. I can't even blame Howie Roseman for that unless Peterson said, I don't want Wentz, and they signed him to that money anyway. That's different. If that's not what happened and Peterson was in the mix, he has an obligation to do everything he can to make that work and coach his butt off with this kid. He has that obligation. Floor is yours, Ryan.
Yeah, I don't think Doug Peterson should be fired. And you know, we live in this culture that if you have a bad year or things are going bad, if you have Lane Johnson out, if Jason Peters is hurt, if at one point all you had was Kelsey healthy on the front line, that you think everything should go well. And then you lose Miles Sanders for a while. Obviously, Jalen Reagor is out. DeSean Jackson. Like, you have all these things. And these are not excuses as to why this team should be bad or why it's okay for them to be bad. But it also, you have to look at 2017, you win the Super Bowl, right? 2018, you're a bounce pass off of Alshon Jeffrey's chest from being in the NFC Championship. The next year, with backups, with practice squad guys, with AAF guys, you make it to the playoffs. You win the NFC East, and you have an opportunity to beat the Seattle Seahawks, but Carson Wentz gets hurt by hitting by Jadeveon Clowney in the first. And so, like, you have all these things happen, and you say, okay, Doug, we've trusted you to this point. You've gotten us to this point. You've been in the playoffs 3 of the last 4 years. You don't just throw that away. And now, do I think he's mishandling this team this year? Do I think he's mishandling this situation that's going on at the quarterback position? Yes. But who comes in and takes this over? This team is going to be cap strapped. This team is going to be trying to figure some things out. I believe he gets another year to work with Carson Wentz to see if they can figure this thing out together. Because what we said at the beginning of the season was this quarterback and this coach should be able to figure it out. They should be able to be good the way they were down the stretch of 2019, even though I know Max didn't think that. So we can't just throw this all away because of this year.
Guys, the problem is Carson Wentz has fallen off this year. When I talked about Brady's cliff, what I meant was he's doing great, all of a sudden off the cliff. He didn't do that. It was steady decline. Carson Wentz did that. Carson Wentz fell off a cliff this year compared to, and really it started the middle of last year, compared to the three previous seasons, like Brett Favre and Peyton Manning. In fact, those numbers just came out. Like completion percentage, everything fell off a cliff, like as only five or six quarterbacks in the history of the NFL have fallen off after the previous three seasons, right? Something's really wrong, and don't blame the offensive line. Everyone's making excuses. In fact, ESPN analytics, updated, by the way, through last night's game, say that the Eagles win on the offensive line, their win rate, is 60%, which places them 12th in the league. That's almost an upper third win rate, but certainly it's over average. So it's not the offensive line. They're actually getting better than average play and protection for Wentz.
Let me say thing, Max. I'm not saying that's I'm not saying that's a reason.
But he won't run Peterson's offense. He wouldn't do it. Everyone's like, well, Nick Foles, Peterson simplified things for Nick Foles. Well, Nick Foles would run the offense. Wentz does his thing. That's why when he comes out at the press conference and says, that's just the way we do things around here, that's a dude who feels like he has a lot of juice in the organization. And Stephen A., maybe the head coach feels like, what am I supposed to do? This dude can do it and get away with it.
Well, again, if you're sitting there, let me ask you this question, Max. Are you reporting that or are you guessing? Has sources told you that Carson Wentz? What have they told you?
I won't report it. I won't report it, but I'll say that it's a very educated guess based on conversations and observations.
Okay, I can respect that. I can respect that. I mean, if what you're saying is remotely accurate in that regard, then I'm with you. I'm with you. My whole point is that, again, that would speak to Peterson being helpless. I don't view him as helpless. And if he's not helpless, he has an obligation to fix this. He ain't playing.
All right, you guys, Max with the scoop. Another thing we know, we've got a game, Ravens-Steelers, coming up just a few hours. Wednesday afternoon football. Who would have thought?
I'll take it.
How 2020 does it get? Guys, thanks for a good show. See you later.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.